Good evening, everybody.
Heplo.
Hemlo, we are live from the orbitable friend moon base.
From the year 2027.
Yes.
Because we are even farther in the future.
Ooh. We're in the future. For those of you tuning into the weather report, it snowed, it got icy, and then it thawed and rained. That is what happened in the weather.
Oh, God, have people started taking bets on what happens with these streams now?
Oh, no.
5-1, they'll be 1 minute late. 3-1 by 10 minutes, and 2-1 for everyone having already run off to the pub. Not this time.
However,
you probably want... Yeah, it's pretty good odds, 2-1 on that.
We have never actually been about... Well, maybe once. We were very rarely more than 30 seconds late.
No, we were never late. Other people's just sense of time disrupts as soon as they try and watch these.
Well, we've been broadcasting for about a minute and a half, and it's about a minute and a half past seven, so
Anyway, I hope you've all had a good New Year's.
Yes.
And that you all got the world's best Christmas present, which if you haven't bought, you can still buy. You can buy book.
Yes. We'll do our buy book thing. We're still selling book, and in fact, there may be some more news on book front and publisher front and stuff quite soon. We'll talk about it when all that happens.
Yes.
But please do, since you've got all your Christmas...
The Christmas present of the century and also the millennium and the eon and whatnot. So if you don't have it already somehow, then what are you doing? Buy it now!
Yes, buy. But we'll skip the dank one for today. I've been using that too much. But
I suppose before we get into it, and as appropriate as it might as well be worth mentioning, that if you want to support what we do on these somewhat regular streams, you can do so via supporting us directly on YouTube by becoming a channel member.
We're still fully monetized somehow, yes.
Or you can give money to the Ko-Fi, which means we don't pay the YouTube tax, or you can become a subscriber to the Substack. There are many options.
Yes, you can donate, yes.
But I hope you've all had a happy Christmas and a good New Year.
Yes.
You all deserve it. You're all good people, I hope.
I hope so too. I'll pin the buy book, but yes, we've got all our bump out of the way.
We agree to trade one book for one red hot pouch of the finest duty free amber leaf. Oh, I'm sorry, we only take drum blue in this house.
Drum blue. Oh God. But no, today, what we are discussing, as the thumbnail says, and I'll leave that up because the image actually is from I think a Jewish Chronicle article, but it was too perfect. Those of you who can't see it, yes, that is the Wailing Wall.
I think the only thing you had to put in this image was Netanyahu.
Oh, yeah, the only edit I made to this was Netanyahu. The rest of it is actually a positive. This is supposed to be not a satirical article.
Excuse me. There is one subject joke about, and that is the nation of Israel and its legitimacy.
Yes, we were getting there, and we're very glad it is. We're very glad that this was a serious attempt at promotion, because we do, as we always say, we do love and value the nation of the notion of Israel.
Yes, but I think I suppose in the way this evening we're doing a little bit of a kind of a meta stream. And I would say possibly in an overrepresented manner, we know a lot of people involved in content production.
Content creation.
And not just politics, but all sorts of different manner of things.
Yes.
And people we've bumped into and got to know and whatever else. And really, there is not really a one place for all sort of summary of what actually happens as you attempt to be an influencer, quote unquote, and what pitfalls there might be in actually trying to maintain this as some form of lifestyle. And I think there will obviously be individuals we will talk about specifically, but I think really what we're wanting to do here is describe the general sort of path that these people follow through the development of their career and their content and their channel and whatever else. And really, frankly, unfeasible and unrealistic nature of attempting to do this, because I think a lot of people who are engaged in making this sort of stuff aren't anywhere near transparent enough about how bad it actually is.
Well, the background of this as well is that influencers are mentioned a lot in mainstream news. They become a political favourite, really. Mm. But the actual economics of being an influencer, all of it, in fact, every aspect of being a quote-unquote influencer as a lifestyle and a living doesn't work.
Yeah.
What was portrayed to you as the influencer dream is impossible, and it's impossible in multiple ways, as we'll get into. But that's the framing here. We will start, as we sometimes do, with a subject that we've covered before, but this we can see in a new light. Social media, as we all know, is fake and gay. That was one of our streams. We'll get some stuff from that at some point, and we'll be peppering through these videos that are linked to the description, that if you've not seen them before, after this, I would go and watch them, because it's a good add-up. But we're using a huge amount of material here, I think possibly even too much, to show you that being an independent influencer is very unlikely.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think part of really what I think is a cracking sort of lead-in here is even just the sort of title and subheading of this article here.
Yeah, this is from December 24, 2021. This is from the Grey Zone.
This is four and a bit years old now.
Yes.
Leaked files expose serious PSYOPs veteran astroturfing bread tube star to counter COVID restriction critics. Now, I think we all know this stuff goes on. Yes. People have an idea that being online and being an influencer isn't really quite as independent as they say.
No.
But I don't think people quite understand to the fullest extent how bad it is and how often people are wrapped up in what are, quite frankly, intelligence operations.
Yes.
Whether actively or passively. And there is a whole sort of rigmarole of stuff we've got to go through here to try and hopefully describe to you why that always seems to happen. And that becoming an influencer and having your independence and your ability to self-editorialize stripped away from you is not the exception. It's actually the matter of course.
Yes, we are sold this view of a sea of independent influencers giving you information that is more reliable than the captured corporate media that nobody trusts.
Yeah, I mean, why is an aspect of the British Home Office through Valiant Projects or whatever it was called, sending money to a leftist YouTuber who talks about culture jammy stuff as part of a PSYOPs campaign?
Yes.
I mean, it's actually trying to get to the point whereby you understand the reality of what leads people to do this, I think, is going to be quite insightful. So hopefully over the course of the next hour or so, we might attempt
to do that. For those who didn't see this, the YouTuber Philosophy Tube, who is now Philosophy Troon, they were given money directly by the UK government from the pot of money used to astroturf the White Helmets.
Yes.
Because the guy who was supposedly the Dutch head of the White Helmets was mysteriously found dead in his hotel room, as these people seem to always do. But if you guys want the full, rather insane story about how Philosophy Tube is just a Home Office employee, go and watch our previous stream.
But I think what we might try to do at the start here as well, for a bit of context, is try and create a bit of a timeline. Because it is our contention that not only is being an influencer really an unprofitable business and something that just isn't worth taking on as an individual pursuit, is that this has also got more difficult as time has gone on. People in the audience with old age pensions and bus passes will remember the adpocalypse.
Well, before this, we'll keep this on screen here, because this is, I actually found it, it's a bit of a leftist perspective, but really what they're saying is that the algorithmic adpocalypse stuff added up to a cultural shaping moment. Mm. And really what the adpocalypse was about YouTube and various of the corporate interests, reasserting what they think the narrative of online media in a meta sense should be, which shows you straight away the impossibility of being an independent content creator, in quotes, in general, in that there are, let's say, non-direct pressures. We're not going to talk about those quite as much. We're not going to talk about the non-direct pressures. We're going to talk about just direct pressures.
Yes.
We're going to talk about direct or on-teating.
I think they say it right here, right at the bottom of this abstract. Yes. Through closely studying the new regime of content moderation and analysing user testimonies in the aftermath of the adpocalypse, this essay poses critical questions about the public utility-like role of digital platforms, whose gatekeeping function remains largely outside the purview of public debate and deliberation. It's an obvious and a simple point, but if you are going to become a content aggregator and you are starting to editorialize along your own business and or ideological lines, somebody at some point is going to put their hand up and go, excuse me, where's the oversight for making sure that this isn't going to have content that we would deem publicly unfit for consumption on it?
Yes. Well, this is also, and I'll talk about these guys in a second, this also led to an industry I like to refer to as subsistence streamers, which is, yes, there is a class of people who do, quote-unquote, make money off the internet, but what happens with them is they end up as these everything stream, like everyone is DSP now.
Mm.
Everyone sits and plays video games badly whilst rambling for 8 hours.
Your DX racer chair.
Yeah.
Opinions about, again, like sort of just vapid day-to-day culture jammy stuff that's actually like sub-meme level.
It's not even like fashionable mechanical keyboard Twitch streaming stuff anymore. I don't want to dump on the guy because I just don't mind Chud Logic and people like that, but that is who I'm talking about. There's an entire industry of people who do 8-9 hour streams a day, 5-6 days a week.
And the thing as well is that I can even remember a time where this was like an eccentricity.
Yes.
Someone that did YouTube but also streamed like on Twitch 2 or 3 days a week. You're like, whoa, they are putting some work in. You know, this is all a different experience. But that now actually has to be the norm for some people. Have to be disaggregated across 3 or 4 different platforms.
Yes.
You need patronage models across 4 or 5 different platforms. I mean, even we have to do this to a certain extent. Not because we are trying to make this a feasible business, but because we're actually just trying to justify the amount of time it takes us to do some of this stuff.
And it can be difficult to juggle that stuff. I seem to get the Substack back up and running. That's one of the things that's falling through the cracks a bit, partially due to some eccentricities with the back end. But the whole point, though, is we are so far along from the quote-unquote adpocalypse now.
We've
had about 7 of them. There was this Adpocalypse 2 when they created YouTube Kids as a completely locked-off platform because of pregnant Elsa Spider-Man shit. We've had multiple instances of just YouTube saying that the ad rates are being adjusted. We've got premium. But those of you who know anybody who makes money off YouTube, which not many people do, we're in quite a unique position that we do know a lot of people who are professional, actually independent content creators. None of them are doing very well.
Yes.
None of them are doing, especially they're not doing well off ad revenue and they're not doing well off social media payments. All that stuff, if you're trying to make a real business and you don't have a teat to be on, it's got worse, and it's got worse again, and it's got worse again. Well, it's just all these pressures, and you're right, everybody has to have 15 different platforms, all high-quality YouTubers, people who do proper content, like automotive content, musical content, things like that. They all have to sell off-site products, which is their main revenue stream.
Yes. They have to have a merch store, events bracket.
They have to have 2 sponsors for each video. They have to have a general sponsor and a specific sponsor.
So, I mean, we could spend probably an hour alone talking about this one dynamic. But what we can state for a declarative fact is that the model of business people would have engaged in on YouTube, say, 10 years ago, where you make content, YouTube serves adverts on that content for you, either through you as an individual or as part of a multi-channel network, doesn't work.
Well,
that is not how you make money anymore. That is how you make your content not a complete loss.
Yes, that is how you...
And I think as an aside as well, that there is actually something interesting nowadays, and this is something we discussed when we were talking about this amongst ourselves the other day, that majority of actual or worthwhile content on, say, a platform like YouTube really doesn't come from people who do it as a job. It comes from people who have otherwise businesses or transferable skills who are then using YouTube as a platform to expand that business, that career, that subset of skills. Individuals whose skills are totally limited to the manufacturing of content, they don't make anything worthwhile.
Well, you also get, in terms of advertising, people see advertising as a loss, partly because the advertising industry and its interface with big tech is so heavily patrolled by the quote-unquote, societal tastemakers, i.e. Just the content police, as in you've got 15 different NGOs who are paid for by big tech, who go around to lobby advertisers and tech companies that are also paying them. Yeah,
I forgot about this.
Yeah,
I'll even forget. I forgot. Let's scroll down a second.
It's Stop Funding Hate. Do you remember Stop Funding Hate?
No, not just that. Today, UN member states formally adopt the Global Compact for Migration, which endorses stopping allocation of public funding to media outlets that systematically promote intolerance, xenophobia, racism, and other forms of discrimination towards migrants.
Hegemony means hegemony, yes.
This is 2018.
Yes.
And people are still running around talking about, like, hope, not hate and stuff. I mean, who even knows about this anymore? When was the last time you heard this even mentioned? Now, you can make an argument that that's because the Global Compact for Migration didn't really come to any grand policy, but it's clearly indicative of a direction that we have been following since then and before.
Well, this is our first point in this. This is one big structure that has slowly and surely ground down the views, you know, the dollar per view of online content in general. But that is because none of these sites make any fucking money. Oh God, there's like a blocked banner here that's taken up half the page. But
Google was forced into disclosing YouTube revenue by SEC. But there's an important point here that you want to mention.
Yes.
And it's really the influencer-shaped hole in all of this, which
yes.
is, well, if Google makes X revenue through YouTube, what is its profitability through YouTube?
Well, the thing is, I've been digging.
They won't tell us that.
Nobody talks about the fact. In fact, the best thing I could find was a fucking LinkedIn post. And I hate LinkedIn. I have a Smurf account I use because LinkedIn is a doxing machine. I will never be on LinkedIn. Ever.
Everyone's going to realize we all live in Birmingham now. Oh, no. We're all yam-yams.
Yeah. A very wild yam-yam. We're gonna release you back onto the chase. sorry. There is no reliable figures for YouTube's actual profitability. Many people, Google itself and Alphabet are a black box. All social media companies, all big tech companies are
Facebook, Meta.
Yeah, they're all financial black boxes in a huge plethora of ways that companies that aren't military contractors wouldn't be allowed
X
to be.
Slash Twitter as well.
Yeah.
Gets into this.
Again, they're allowed to be opaque in a way that is unusual because they are defense contractors. They are. Meta is a defense contractor. Google is a defense contractor. They all contract out to the federal government to do work that we're not quite sure what it is. We know what some of it is, but they build large data centers, and obviously what they're doing now is the whole AI thing. But we don't know. We suspect that because most YouTube videos take up data and don't make any money, what you're not seeing is all the unprofitable shit that all this supports.
Mm.
From what I understand, there is no profitable method of streaming. Netflix has never made any money. YouTube has never proven that it's made any money. Twitter doesn't make any money.
Well, I think an even further and more appropriate example, because
yes.
the whole thing was Elon Musk bought it because it was a failing business. That's when it had
more active users,
better functionality, and actually just had useful information.
And better relationships with advertisers.
And its messaging system worked. You had TweetDeck and all these other things that you could integrate into it. You don't have that anymore. I would be very surprised if Twitter is as profitable now as it unprofitably was when Elon first bought it.
Video streaming doesn't make any money, or at least you can't. Everyone who isn't YouTube doesn't make any money, and YouTube won't even say if it makes money or not.
Yes.
Twitter doesn't make any money. Twitter and other sites like that. Again, Facebook's a bit of a novel case because all it does is sell your data, as does Twitter.
Earlier in October, Musk stated that Twitter was operating at a $4 million loss per day. I wonder if he's improved that since then.
Well, the point of Twitter wasn't to make money, it was to buy Twitter.
Yes.
As we all, newspapers are the same. Newspapers in the past didn't really make much money. They used to make some money, but a lot of it was about patronage. And we see here that Twitter as a social media platform is only kept relevant and a going concern because money is put into it. Social media sites are entropic. Even selling the users' data, even selling to advertisers, all of this, none of these companies...
It's all a money sink.
Yes, none of these companies really can make any money. They're all investment-bound, they all have stock options, they all sign multi-billion dollar AI, in quotes, deals with the Defense Department.
I mean, there's a whole other side to this as well, which is, like, how do you even cost a post?
Yes.
How do you work out a payment rate for that that's even appropriate to accurate? When given the way that all the advertising standards works nowadays, it's so much more complex than it was 5-10 years ago.
Well, the point is that all of, apart from the headline ones, again, the holding companies that own these companies magically make money, but they can never...
Alphabet does.
Yeah.
They can, Google just about does. Well, but Meta, YouTube never posts a profit.
Yeah, Meta and Alphabet make money. Their subsidiary parts, maybe a lot of people argue it's tax fiddling, but again, it is so opaque. And from what we've seen and other people trying the business model, these are money sinks. There is something going on other than money making that makes these platforms exist and be perpetuated.
Which I suppose becomes a bit more transparent when we look at it through this sort of lens, which is that all the way back in 2010, people were discussing...
I think this is from 2010. Yeah,
2010, 2009.
Yeah.
People paying subscriptions to Wall Street Journal, New York Times for online news were not able to turn that into a profitable business. So clearly, the function of all of this is not about the content, not about the content as a product, as in a specific item of content, but the overarching idea of content consumption. It's actually just providing you with stuff. They are willing to throw good money after bad and the hope that you just keep consuming it. Because otherwise, I see no reason for them to be doing this.
So, video streaming, we can't say if it makes money or not in any case. Social media, again, most of it doesn't make any money.
Blogging, as we used to call
blogging,
it.
Blogging, well, this is, again, 2010, I believe 2010, from the Outdoor Writers Association of America. And they were talking about all the way back then that online newspapers were popular but not profitable. The same thing has persisted. We've had professional newsrooms cut and influencers, in quotes, used to bridge this gap. And a lot of people have celebrated this changeover because they think it gives them more independent voices, in quotes.
But what it goes to show is the fact that it's just about you getting to engage with content in general.
Yes.
This is why the vast majority of news articles that are shared onto Twitter are from a site with a paywall that isn't expecting you to read it. I think the paywall is actually there to save them money so they don't have to serve you the full page or bother editing the entirety of an article.
We've noticed that when we bypass paywalls and articles, you will often get... again, below the crease, no editing.
I mean,
grammar, spelling, content, it's all terrible.
I mean, I'm some upper middle class Oxbridge graduate with some sort of religious studies doctorate that's got a mountain of debt to pay, but I get to write an article once every 3 weeks and unheard that's paywalled. You ain't paying that student debt off, pal. It ain't happening.
No, that is not happening. And again, people talk about high-quality journalism, in quotes, and we can debate about the terribleness or not of traditional journalism. But what has filled the void is really nothing. It is vague chatter and also talking head influencers who appear to be independent, but who are not.
And there's another aspect to this as well, though. If you are something like The Critic and you don't operate like The Telegraph or something that has a traditional newsroom, you can establish something that looks like a paper that doesn't actually have to have the fixed costs of one.
No.
And this is a larger part of the whole influencer thing, more appropriately on social media and Instagram and YouTube, is that for massive corporate interests, the influencer model has given them scope to basically disband the entirety of their marketing departments and budgets. and offload these costs onto unprofessional freelancers who are doing 17 different jobs but are happy to do it because they're getting paid a pittance and getting some free substandard quality product.
Yes, so we've seen that streaming media doesn't make money, social media doesn't make money, online news doesn't make money, and yet influencers, especially political influencers, are downstream of all of these
and you can't move for them. You can't move for them nowadays. No. This is the thing, is that this is now beyond a saturated market, probably deliberately, I might add. So the likelihood that anyone who is a new entrant, not someone that's been in this sort of business for, say, upwards of 3 or 4 years, or post-COVID when all that wave of people came in, is to say that anyone starting now is definitely not going to be making money out of this.
One of the most tragic aspects of this is the death of local news. Local news used to be one of the only places that you could see, reliable journalism. There are very good local writers who write about courts, who properly write about local events. And that being severed has been very deliberate. There has been almost a war on local journalism because of how much of a problem actually local journalism in the past has been. This is one of the big losses, and the influencer bubble has not replaced the structured the local career reporter. They were thin on the ground even by the early 2000s, but still, local reporting no longer existing is a huge loss, and it makes actually local news easier to manipulate, not harder.
So, then this begs a question, doesn't it? Who are influencers able to maintain their, dare I say, career, their duties, whatever you want to call it? Well,
yes.
There is only so many possible options. They either fail as a business and go away.
Yes.
They are people who are supported by their own independent wealth or the wealth of family.
Yes.
They are supported directly by some form of corporate and or political interest. Or the fourth option, you get unbelievably lucky, diversify into products, brands and all sorts of different things because you actually have skills outside of whinging on the internet. And that's, you're maybe talking like 1 in 1,000 there, maybe 1 in 10,000. Well, so yeah. Everyone else, I'm sorry, has kind of really got to fit into those other three, haven't they?
Yes. You either parrot somebody else and are basically a face for somebody else, or you are independently wealthy, or you represent a business.
Mm.
It can be your own business, but you have to represent a business. That is the only way you can viably be an influencer. The days of, again, even people like PewDiePie were ridiculous exceptions who nearly had themselves be completely unpersoned multiple times.
Mm.
It is almost impossible to be a quote-unquote professional influencer. It's sold to people as this ubiquitous thing, and yet we always see is people giving up on it. If you watch good YouTube channels over the past year, you will probably have heard that a lot of people who are on YouTube are just not making money. You have multiple video failures for very large channels that they've talked about. If you watch any kind of content, you've seen this. And that is what's been happening, in that these people have been slowly ground down and ground down and ground down to the point that really all that is left are the independently wealthy, the faces of businesses, the faces of other people's agenda, and the Nepo babies, the people who think that they are owed a media career no matter what.
Speaking of which.
Yes, yes. And as we've talked about during our stream about the minor elite, this influencer economy is becoming stuffed with failed minor elites who don't fit in anywhere else. The cast-offs, the untalented cast-offs of the elite used to go into journalism, and now journalism has become influencer economy. Mm. And so what
journalist activists.
Yeah, and what you end up with is repugnant Nepo babies like Andrew Gold, who attended £6,000 a term Merchant Taylor School to become a podcaster. Yes. Imagine going from attending a £6,000 a term school to basically, you know, it's degrees of magnitude, but really, he's not that far away from what we do in an amateur capacity. In terms of impact,
No, he is actually really less established than something like a local radio show.
Yes.
Because he doesn't actually have a fixed audience.
No.
Nor does he have a fixed platform for advertising local businesses to said local audience where there's proper capture. He is appealing to an exclusively online demographic, which is disparate and spread across the world. It has no way to appeal to a direct market for any product, therefore you can't really advertise it on the way that you were before. So what's the purpose of this?
Well,
Has Andrew Gold got so much of his own money to bung into this as a media project? Probably not. Is it some people related to what he used to do at the BBC? Who knows? Maybe, maybe not. What we can see is, though, that given the fact that he has received more airtime in the last week or two for speaking to bloody Steve Laws, that really money is being sunk here so that you are served Andrew Gold the product.
Well, also, I will stress that we use him as an example. He's completely interchangeable. Andrew Gold is not influential. He does not move the political needle. He does not matter. He is an example of a phenomenon. And people are right. This is really media insiders talking to themselves. It is the appearance of influence, which is why we would never talk to someone like Andrew Gold. I don't think winning a debate with Andrew Gold matters. I don't think he needs to benefit from the oxygen of our genuine independent audience over here. I think we have more actual fans than he does. I've never heard somebody turn around and go, "Oh, I'm a huge fan of Andrew
I mean, I
Gold."
bet you Andrew Gold plays all day in the spectator office, but that's where his watch hours are coming from.
Yes, probably, but I just wanna put this bit here because that's funny. I'm like Badil, my dad grew up in a working class surroundings. He was one of few of his ethnicity at his. That's an odd one, Mr. Gold. I thought you'd been here for 100 years and you were just as British as we were.
And suffered for it. 6 million
Million
wasn't
what?
enough, etc. Though he never complains now. Maybe you should learn from
Yeah,
that.
maybe you shouldn't be complaining for him.
Later, he changed the family name from Goldstein to Gold in the hope of curbing discrimination. You poor soul, Andrew.
Oh.
You poor soul.
Yeah, it's not like people generally,
Sorry, John, I've had enough. People should stop being
Well,
mean to Andrew Gold
I'd also like to point
online.
out that here is Andrew Gold in 2021 being given a blog on Jewish news. What a lovely thing for an independent influencer and failed BBC
Yeah,
talking head.
he just did a stint of like Jewish community writing between being a BBC cast off
The
and
Jewish podcaster, too many secrets.
but he is representative of an entire cast of minor elite nepo baby characters, all of which really we've all mentioned before, but it's
Yes.
worth having a we've got a little rogues gallery to flick through here. We've got a one Winston Aubrey Alder de Balkan Marshall, son of
Paul,
Paul Marshall.
son of Paul Marshall, the only person who one heard is four.
But the thing as well is with this, I find it hilarious the fact that like you could never imagine them coming out of the Beatles and becoming like talk TV hosts, could you?
No.
But here's Mumford and Sons, Winston Marshall, a band probably nowhere near as successful as the Beatles. I don't really care. But the fact that he can be just sort of turned over from one day to the next, from pop star to podcaster,
Minor elite welfare, minor elite
I just think it's
welfare.
just hilarious. It's like someone's turned around and he's sat there at the family Christmas and drawn the short straw, and he's got to lose the pop sort of
Well,
clout
also,
because he's
like,
got to be a
Mumford and Sons
podcaster.
are insufferable. They are some of the worst, like, fake pop folk you can make.
Oh, thank you, Ra8784, for the tenner, for the pint fund, and happy new year.
Yes.
Same to yourself. Who else we got here? One,
He's
Melissa Chen, who
white,
is,
yes.
yes, Mr. Winston Marshall's wife as of 2014, who works for, oh God, but it's, have they got the name of it here? That yes, Ideas Beyond Borders, which she supposedly co-founded. She absolutely did not. It was co-founded by some a couple of billionaires of a certain persuasion out in America for the purposes of spreading democracy in the Middle East.
Famous defender of Amos Yee, the paedophile.
Yes. But just it's just another example of just somebody who's an absolute nobody that appears on bloody podcasts as a journalist. Gary Stevenson,
yeah.
Who became a Merchant City banker for some reason. Because, yeah, when you get kicked out of your sixth form college for a drugs charge, you end up with a job at Citibank too, don't you?
Yes. It's just ridiculous. I don't...
Are people getting the Amos Yee reference in the chat now?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But Gary Stevenson's a very good example, again, of all of these people. All of these people do not have organic audiences.
And, of course, he is a left-coded example of this. And in the way that they put people like Andrew Gold into our sphere, knowing that we will detest them, their backgrounds, and what they represent, Gary Stevenson is a man who basically represents upper-middle-class, yuppie money types.
Yes.
Is really antithetical to the sort of hard, far-left sort of brand that he's being sold on as.
Yes. It's the same thing with a lot of people on the left.
There's a favourite.
Constantin Kissin.
I mean...
We've been over this before, but yes.
Quite possibly literally placed in British media as a thanks from his like family back and forth for possibly pilfering money out of the Soviet Union.
Constantin Kissin's father is a kleptocrat who stole food out of the mouths of Yeltsin-era Russian people by looting their country and running away with the money and putting his son in a prestigious private school before he could speak English.
Well, yeah, I think that
all penniless Russian dissidents send their sons to prestigious English primary schools when they leave the country. They have looted.
Why are so many podcasters all privately educated? Why are these sort of people always within close proximity of certain church groups, certain other co-religions?
Failed lesbian Mary Harrington.
Or they're all privately educated. Now, do you actually know a single person in day-to-day life privately educated?
Yes. I know a couple, but I only know a couple out of hundreds of people.
Yeah. Other than people in my school who left my primary school to go to private secondary schools, I have never, other than people I probably bumped into uni and never bothered to speak to, have known someone to be privately educated. But yet, every podcast person online is. I must be the odd one out.
Well, the whole point, how do you go from being a privately educated, supposed, like, somebody who talks to people in NATO and things like that, to being a podcaster? How do you span those two worlds? It really is just the bottom rung of the unemployed minor elite in many of these places. To extrapolate out, was what we talked about before in our social media and fake and gay stream is just the amount of AstroTurf that exists. We're not going to go through Operation Earnest Voice again. We're not going to go through all the government-funded AstroTurfing schemes.
If you want to know about the platforms, go watch that. I think really here we are focusing on the medium that is the people that have to toil away like slaves on these platforms.
Well, a bit of a flavour here. This is from the DHS leaks, and basically Twitter, even after it was bought, was working hand in glove with the DHS to monitor quote-unquote disinformation and scrub leaked documents and basically just fuck around with everybody.
Remember we were getting like the Twitter files at the same time, and was all meant to show how like the bad lefties were spying on us all, and that Elon Musk and his friends would never do that.
Well, it's just there's so many instances. We know that this landscape is just filled with falsehood, and when we consider the financial impossibility of being an influencer, coupled with what we know about all of these government-funded informational warfare campaigns that we've been under. Mm. We've talked about counterinsurgency. This is how it works in practice. These are your low-level agents. It also interlocks with the, again, elite welfare schemes of keeping these awful, talentless, failed Nepo babies in job and on teeth. Also, what we learned, of course, during Prison Leaks, if you want to go and see our very comprehensive stream about Prism and how a lot of the reporting was a limited hangout on it, go and watch our Through a Prism Darkly. But we know that Facebook, Google, and everybody else really who was in the internet works hand in glove with the US, with the Five Eyes, really, security services, who all launder information between each other. These information and propaganda systems we've learned about in the past will only be more advanced today. And they will only be more advanced in use of the agendas of today.
Yes, and I think there is a twin sort of thing here that gets us onto the sort of next little point we've got, which is that if you haven't already, do go and find a copy of C.A. Bond's Nemesis.
Yes.
As a sort of further application of de Juvenel's thought and a slightly more modern take. And there's some conclusions you can get from that book, one of which I'm afraid is that decentralized networks a lot of the time actually aren't decentralized.
No.
More often than not, they tend to represent someone who wants to give the illusion of decentralization and the illusion that, that legitimacy and prestige can be manufactured from the bottom all the way to the top. Now, this isn't the case. We know that these social media platforms themselves are not decentralized in the way they purport to be because they come directly from the arms of intelligence and military intelligence at that. Therefore, it's quite likely to presume that the way that the individuals on these decentralized platforms are networked is not decentralized at all.
No, well,
and that it's no surprise then that in concluding from what a lot of Bond wrote in his own title, that he then went on to Twitter and claimed the fact that, quite rightly, BAP and the sphere around it was being paid arm and a fist money from Zionist influences to psychologically and emotionally manipulate people online using right-wing aesthetics to make them support Jewish interest group causes. Now, this is something we all take as a fact, pretty much.
Yeah, we all take this for granted now.
This is a man who 3-4 years ago got completely and utterly cancelled because he'd wrote a cracking book that should have sold a lot better than it did, and then was persona non grata because even Imperium had to get rid of him because he basically turned around and went, this entire internet thing is fake and fucking gay.
Well, I want to start with this next section, really, when we talk about, let's say, the scruples of the influencer and cases we've seen in the past. This is the real nuts and bolts of, again, the point of this is that you should default distrust people. You should default distrust right-wing influencers. We get in so much trouble for going, you smell wrong.
Mm.
But the overwhelming majority of these people you will see pushed into your feed with quote-unquote base talking points are manufactured. It is financially impossible to be an independent influencer. We can only do what we do because we do it in our spare time. We don't get compensated for this. We are enthusiastic amateurs. But in being restricted to the enthusiastic amateur, you end up with a situation where it's not organized. It's atomized.
Well, this is exactly as Betts described it.
Yes.
For the enthusiastic amateur, you have to create a profitable environment for them to be engaged and see it as good business. The only way you do that is by effectively having government operations or completely dishonest corporate influence.
Yes, and we've seen this, the BetterHelp scan, a huge amount of the chosen influencers, let's say, from YouTube. And I don't mean that in that sense. I mean, as in, YouTube has a whitelist. Mm. And outside that whitelist, you are basically fucked. Mm. You have seen 10 years of degrowth of dollar per view if you are not one of these chosen accounts. And many of those accounts, like, oh God, like Philip DeFranco, that vapid news whore.
You reminded me.
My dad's medication.
No, Philip DeFranco. I remember a bloody Casey Neistat stuff about voting for Hillary now. Oh God.
BetterHelp. BetterHelp is therapy warehousing. It is preying on people's neuroses to warehouse them with untrained, quote-unquote, professionals who will probably just make these people lose hope and commit suicide. It's just terrible. It was this whole scam. If you don't remember the whole BetterHelp thing, look it up, because it shows you how awful most of the people that get pushed by YouTube are and how little they understand who their sponsors are.
And they also probably understood fair well that offering this to an audience of people on the internet knew they were going to pick up a demographic of people that were more predominantly shut-ins or depressed or whatever else. It was a double whammy to get lots of people who are mentally unsound to pay money so that someone else can turn around and tell them, yes, you are mentally unsound.
Because these people are unscrupulous and are grifters, it left the door open for, during lockdowns, all of these influencer campaigns. New York Times, this is from...
Oh, one Taylor Lorenz.
Taylor Lorenz, August 1st, 2021. White House has teamed up with TikTok stars while some states are paying local micro-influencers for pro-vaccines campaign. Note the language here. To fight vaccine lies, authorities recruit an influencer army. This has been done so many times by the state openly that it's almost kind of funny that people believe any of what you see is real.
Los Angeles. Ellie Zeeler, a 17, a TikTok creator with over 10 million followers, received an email in June from Village Marketing, an influencer marketing agency. It said it was reaching out on behalf of another party, the White House. With Miss Zelia, a high school senior who usually posts short fashion and lifestyle videos, be willing, the agency wondered, to participate in a White House-backed campaign encouraging the audience to get vaccinated against the coronavirus. Now, we all know this stuff happened, but to actually sit there and think about this as a 17-year-old with a independently managed 10 million follower TikTok platform.
Yeah, yeah, definitely not.
Being approached by a completely sort of skin suit PR company that might as well just call itself White House Marketing.
It's Fed Marketing?
Yeah.
Do some of these before we... Too many tags like I am. But again, here's... that's just the article there.
$1,000 cash payments and a TikTok influence army are part of the campaign to get people vaccinated. I mean, Facebook, the whole go out and vote thing. Fucking hell. This stuff's so prevalent now that I actually don't... I suppose this is the point we're making here is that you don't have an economy of online
this
content without this.
This is why we don't play well with others. This is why we turn around to your favourite quote-unquote independent right-wing person, or we turn around to the big pooster accounts on Twitter and we go... Fuck you, we know who pays you, we can smell where your money comes from. This is why. It is impossible to be an independent influencer with a large platform on a long enough timeline with very few notable exceptions.
Mm.
It is one of the things you should be most suspicious of, and yet we are told by default that we shouldn't question people. We might scare those people off.
I mean, this is part of how our whole, I think, journey into coming to see the elite theory and the models of patronage actualized into the world comes from. Because we sat there and we looked at certain people on social media and what they were doing and began to understand that, wait, they're being paid to do this. And okay, you go look at lefty opposition sort of research sites and they tell you it's the Koch brothers and they're paying them to deny climate change. And you think, well, I bet you that's not all they're being paid for. And I bet you it's not just about fighting or denying climate change.
This was extremely strange because all of it went away and they never proved any of this money was coming from Russia anyway. In fact, it looks like the Tenet organization set up was actually made...
You might contextualize what you're getting into here.
Yeah, it was actually made to look... Well, yes, the Tenet organization, which this is about... Well, it's on screen. I'm contextualizing it. This was supposed to be about... Do you remember when, like, Lauren Chen and Tim Pool, the story came out...
They tried to bolster all the post-millennial stuff and then it completely blew up in their face because they were trying to relaunch that platform off what they thought was money they were going to get from this or something?
Yeah. It was supposed to be, like, international investors, but... It turned out just to be the excuse for the US government to turn around and go, oh, this is Russia, Russia, Russia money. Russia paying influencers, guys. Russia, Russia. By the way, there's very little evidence that Russia actually pays English language influencers at all. Mm. In fact, it doesn't bother. It's not bothered about English language perception because they think that they are much better resource to talk to things like the stands. They have the stands to keep in line before they talk to little Timmy in Arkansas, because talking to little Timmy in Arkansas actually isn't worth anything because of hegemony. But that's a rant from the time. Yeah, US conservative influencers say if the alleged allegation is proven, they were deceived by Russian media executives following the release of an indictment charging Moscow with interfering in the 2024 US election. Again, this whole narrative was dumb and stupid, but it did show that these people do not check where their money comes from because they were basically working for Fed Honeypot Inc. Yeah.
US officials characterized the US and Canada-based influencers that worked for Tenet as unwitting figures in the Russian scheme, which allegedly paid some commentators hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. Huh. Before your ad revenue, your Patreon, before anything else... Here's more than you're probably going to make all year. you know, but you get to call yourself an influencer and carry the image of being independent.
It's very, very odd. I mean, it also just, one, it confirms a lot of the paranoia of leftists, in quotes, but also it lets these influencers completely off the hook, who are then brought back in to push Israel.
Yes, because at the end of the day...
This is about getting leverage over influencers.
The thing you're
and getting them on teat.
Yes, but the thing you're not allowed to speak about here, and the element that is making all of this happen, is that this economy doesn't exist without this dirty money floating around.
Someone needs to be giving you dirty money for you to have, be like Tim Pool or Lauren Chen. You have to be taking suspicious money from semi-unknown sources for any of this to work. But that whole thing, again, it's so weird that all went away. It was such a bizarre narrative constructed moment that I really don't believe most components of this story are how they were put forward. It is so bizarre and strange and has been framed in such a contradictory but also bias confirming on both ends way that I don't fucking buy this. But these people, it does show you that they had to be paid hundreds of thousands of dollars just to stay afloat for their content. How Lauren Chen went from alt-light YouTuber to alleged Russian asset.
God.
It's all just slop, but it all shows that these people have to have a teat to suck from. If that was actually Russia or America pretending to be Russia, we will never know. Again, the UK government secretly paid foreign YouTube stars for propaganda. Media agency Zinc Network has contracts to recruit social media influencers across Europe.
I believe this is one of the ones one of our friends on Twitter pointed out, is it being involved in a lot of the Armenia stuff as well at the moment.
Well, it's the Foreign Office. The Foreign Office has just been going around, co-founded by former Conservative Party spin doctor. The company has won lucrative contracts from the UK, US, and Australian governments, becoming a major player in Western influence operations. Zinc has previously been exposed for secretly setting up Muslim news platforms and Facebook as part of the government's counter-extremism prevent strategy.
Which people remember from the the Watcher stream.
We've covered Zinc Media
before.
BITU. Yes, but Zinc Media just went around buying up a whole bunch of European influencers, in quotes, to do everything from counter-jihad to a bit of vaccine here. Basically, whatever that they became Foreign Office dog's bodies. They were saying whatever the Foreign Office told them to. But as you can clearly see, this just does happen. You just do have the UK Foreign Office paying influencers directly.
Oh no, that's the.
And by the way, it's not narratives that benefit us.
Guardian one next.
Well, yes. Well, the Institute for Statecraft leaks, which we'll be covering at some point, probably, because oh boy, there's a lot of stuff in there. But the Institute for Statecraft shows that an NGO was completely staffed with intelligence officers. Two, that NGO put out anti-Corbyn material, and three, that nobody fucking cared.
The little subtext of the...
Well, the way they framed it in media was, Foreign Office investigates reports that state-funded body targeted Corbyn. Leaked documents suggest Fife-based company promoted anti-Labour tweets.
Foreign Office Minister Alan Duncan has ordered an investigation that reports the government provided funding to a Scottish-based company meant to counter online Russian propaganda, which has also spread unfavourable views about Jeremy Corbyn. Institute for Statecraft, based in Fife, received hundreds of thousands of pounds in Foreign Office money. According to the Sunday Mail, leaked documents show it tried to promote tweets calling the Labour leader a useful idiot who helped the Kremlin cause and attacked members of his staff.
So, and by the way, this is before the Ukraine conflict. Why was there an NGO staffed by MI5 agents that was, among other things...
pretending to be Russian propagandists, or pretending to be propagandists not from the Institute of Statecraft so that they could associate Corbyn with Russia?
Yes.
Curious.
Here's Taylor Lorenz again in another arc, I believe. It's weird that she wrote this. Is it? I think it is. I think this is a Taylor Lorenz.
Yes, it is. Yeah. A dark money group is secretly funding high-profile democratic influencers.
This, again, was to kind of take some of the steam out of...
Tenet fucking thing.
Well, not just that. There's been a lot of this opening up, let's say, but nothing's done about it. Nothing was done about... nothing was really done about the whole Tenet thing. Everyone got away with that. And nothing has been done about this. This has been going on for a very long time. There's all kinds of instances of this we've talked about, but both political parties in the US have huge influence operations. And it's not about party politics. A lot of it is just about, as we talk about, it is about occupying political space.
In
anyway.
In a private group chat in June, dozens of Democratic political influencers discussed whether to take advantage of an enticing opportunity. They were being offered $8,000 per month to take part in a secretive program aimed at bolstering Democratic messaging on the internet. Words to the wise. If you are an aspiring content creator or political influencer, if you are giving an enticing opportunity, do not go and discuss it with your peers, because you're probably not supposed to, and that'll be how you all get caught. They were being offered $8,000 per month to take part in a secretive program aimed at bolstering Democratic messaging on the internet. But the contract sent to them from Chorus, the non-profit arm of a liberal influencer marketing platform, came with some strings. Among other issues, it mandated extensive secrecy about disclosing their payments and had restrictions on what sort of political content the creators could produce.
Again, you must assume that everyone is on these.
But this isn't the Democrats paying the libs to create opposition research about the evil right-wingers. This is also keeping their own radicals on plantation.
Yes. But that's, again, there's many layers of this, but it's just, yes, they do just pay influencers $8,000 a month, and yes, it does violate FTC rules, but nobody cares.
Mm.
This is illegal, and nothing ever, all they do is talk about it, and then nothing's done about it.
Oh, I mean, but where is the capital of the world for this stuff? The center of influence. I mean, if the I in Israel stands for anything, it's got to stand for influencer, surely.
Well, this is the Times of Israel. We use the Times of Israel quite a lot.
One of our favourite papers.
One of our favourite papers, of course. Inside Israel's Esther Project, which is also, I believe, the Heritage, not Heritage Band,
It's one of the ones associated with Paul Singer, I believe.
Yes.
So if it's not Heritage, it's one of the other ones next to him.
Yes. It's another, but the Esther Project, which Vance spoke for. We talked about that during God's Chosen Lobby.
Yes.
The entire Esther Project. I'd recommend that stream as well. DOJ filings reveal paid US influencer campaign amid AI-powered PR blitz. By the way, we still don't know who was paid.
Yeah.
We have some idea, but no, a foreign lobby group, just paid US influencers cash to vomit their narratives completely illegally, and nothing was done.
Yeah, and like blatantly transparently.
People who believe in law in the abstract and the rule of law are hilarious. People who actually believe in the rule of law are the funniest people alive.
If you believe in the rule of law, I have a bridge to sell you.
And you can't... Yeah, I've got a friendly joke to tell you, it's valid too. As officials call social media the current war's eighth front, new Yes. Yeah, it's disclosure required.
Scroll up for a second. Yeah, yeah. I love the language. One more. Launched a two-track influence operation in the US, blending big-budget political advertising with grassroots style. The filings reveal that a firm called Bridges Partners LLC has been hired to manage an influencer network under a code named the Esther Project. It is unclear if there is any link to Project Esther, a plan to combat anti-Semitism published by the Heritage Foundation.
There
absolutely is.
There definitely is.
In its disclosure, required under the Foreign Agents Restriction Act, Bridges said it was working intended to assist with promoting cultural interchange between the US and Israel.
By the way, they never said who's receiving this money, though. They put it through third parties and...
paying people up to $900,000 in the space of a calendar year.
Yes.
That's not going to change their opinion at all, is it?
This is what we mean. If being an influencer is economically unviable and people don't have visible supporters, they're probably just part of something like this.
Mm.
And again, it's not as... people go, you're paranoid, you're being mean to... No, this is...
the logical default. If you do the maths, if you go through the working of the adpocalypses, the fact that online media doesn't make money, and the fact that influencers, in quotes, are downstream from online media that doesn't make money, everyone you see who is pushed on a platform is from somebody else's interest. Yes. That is not paranoia. It's called using your brain.
And this is what I said earlier at the start of the stream. The reason why we are labouring this point here is not to say that, oh, some people on the internet might be compromised. It's that if you're trying to become a full-time influencer in some way, shape, or form, this is par for the course.
I will go further and say just someone being a full-time, especially a full-time political influencer on the internet, is in of itself suspicious.
Yes.
If you are a full-time political commentator on the internet,
activist or journalist,
that
or whatever,
is by default suspicious. We do not do this for a living. We lose money doing this, basically. We will never make a living from this because, again, it's unviable. But if you see someone who claims to, that person is automatically suspicious. Unless they have, again, you can tell who has a genuine audience. There are people who have medium size and kind of larger, genuine audiences, and those people stick out like a sore thumb because their audiences appear and kind of annoy people a bit, and not in like a bot way, but it's very clear who does and doesn't have an audience, and it's also just very clear who is and isn't pushed. And once you start seeing these patterns, you start seeing these coordinated narratives, you start seeing accounts pushing narratives with each other, you know where that's coming from. We'll hammer it home even more here.
Is this the one from the thumbnail?
No, it's not, actually.
Oh. Converging in the Holy Land, pro-Israel influencers brush off death threats and trolls.
Despite constant stream of online hate.
This one's only from like a few days ago.
Yeah,
This is such... There is such an economy alone of people being paid to go to Israel and become part of their influence operations that it's like a whole vertical of fucking story on this one site.
Being sent to Israel by an Israeli NGO is suspicious, and to anyone who tells you it's not needs to be papped out as well. Anyone who tells you people who took the free trip should be allowed to speak and shouldn't be actually like hissed at and spat at are completely your enemies. Do not let anyone in your midst who took the propaganda trip, especially ones with tiny rapist eyes and big jug ears. Hoping to win back in Republican support, Israel invites MAGA influencers. This is from August, but still, this is going on constant, and look at these freaks. Israel Foreign Ministry has funneled tens of thousands of dollars for about a dozen influencers to visit Israel through Israel 365, a pro-settlement organization attempting to bolster evangelical support for the Jewish state. So they just admit that, again, government money laundered through an NGO giving to MAGA influencers to make them vomit propaganda at you.
Class of Libertarian Online Influencers 2025.
Yeah.
Well done, class.
Well done, Libertarian Influencers. Woo.
You've all gone to Israel Mike Huckabee's office. Oh, God.
This is why we say pull the other one to basically everybody.
Being led by the nose, as it were.
Yeah. This is where the thumbnail
is
from.
Oh, yes.
Editor's notes. While Israel is investing in MAGA-friendly diplomacy, a warm and formal outreach can touch hearts where formal diplomats cannot. You just want to read, you know...
I can't exercise much more sort of sarcasm this evening, but I'm going to go one last little bit
before
just for
further,
you special people.
Thank you for the super sticker. Lament the Guide, you're a very solid supporter and are the only person to use that feature I've ever seen. And thank you, Coney Current Year, for the £5 donation. I said no more forever wars. I meant no more forever wars. In all seriousness, treat Israel influencers like how Indians treat balance, yes. God. And thank you for being a Venus Bro for being a monk. Yes. Also, Lament the Guide. Sorry to read this. Sorry.
Imagine a convoy of tour buses wading through the Judean hills at sunrise. On board sit 16 young American influencers, baseball caps emblazoned with USA and Make America Great Again, eagerly live streaming their journey.
As the buses crest a hill, the golden stones of Jerusalem come into view. The group spills out onto the Western Wall Plaza, a mix of awe and frenzied content creation. The press...
They press
prayer notes into the ancient cracks, pose for selfies draped in Israeli and American flags, and record enthusiastic monologues about fulfilling biblical prophecy. This is what Aaron McIntyre actually believes. Later, they'll visit an Israeli military base on the Gaza periphery, donning IDF hats for group photos with soldiers before an exclusive dinner with officials who extol Israel's fight for Western civilization
against tyranny. Against... every stop, whether overlooking the Galilee or touring a West Bank heritage site, becomes a backdrop for hashtag photos that beam a pro-Israel narrative to millions of followers back home.
And you believe what you see on the internet is genuine?
Excuse me, bro, can you put a kippah on my Bitmoji?
Again, this is from the Kenyan Star. Just Israel bankrolls influencers to boost image with US media. But it's all these people. Again, this does extend down to the little spheres we're in. We make fun of the jug-eared Israel advocates quite often here, but the fact that he just took the propaganda trip and then everybody said, oh no, you have to still listen to him. Just look at it.
I know.
Yes, yes, they do bother to pay Connor fucking Tomlinson to go to the Holy Land and spew propaganda like the ugly gremlin he is.
I do still find... The standard line that was drawn for this in conversation was that, well, at least he didn't pray at the wall.
At least he didn't touch the... At least there's no pictures of him praying at the wall. You people are, like, mental slaves.
I mean, this stuff doesn't stop. It's left, it's right, it's people right on the bottom bloody rung. It's people getting paid...
Oh, my God.
...pittances. Well,
a few people were confused by it, but Progressive Victory has been a little pet project of mine to show people just how far down the tree the money goes. It is unviable to be an influencer at any level. Hmm. And so at every level, again, Brianna fucking Wu, like a Gamergate hangover, going to not even bread tubers, crumb tubers, people with 2,000-3,000 Twitch followers, and paying them to spout DNC quote unquote progressive talking points. And they got caught doing this because a creator called Xander Hall had a massive spurg out on Discord and started screaming about not getting his progressive.
Where's my money, Brianna Wu?
Yeah. You've never heard of Xander Hall. He's not relevant. These
no.
people do not matter. They are bothering to pay crumb tubers you have never heard of through PACs you will never understand the purpose of through influencers you thought had died 5 years ago.
On platforms that have their algorithms manipulated to show you content that is publicly acceptable and in the purview of the current zeitgeist.
It's just, it's the yes, even your incompetent, like, joke lolcow streamers on Twitch are provably bought and paid for just by the giant machine
that
hates you.
I owe my landlord rent. Where's my Zio lobby
Where's
money?
Where's my Zio money? I'm fucked. Where's my Zio money?
I've got to have, like, I've got to pretend to be, like, a trad on Twitter and have this really expensive bougie wedding where I pretend I'm, like, a mad Catholic and stuff. And I've got to buy, like, a house and be a homeowner and have kids and be a trad. Where's my Israeli lobby money? How am I going to afford all this?
Well, as we've been through, I think, in torturous detail, all of the apparatus exists to capture these people and keep them on plantation. And all of the motivation exists because being an influencer on the internet is financially inviable. That's it. That's the show. And please keep this in your mind. Most people will hear this, go, oh, of course that's true, and then next time we go, who is this weird unheard person being pushed as based, they go, how could you say that? This person is so based and genuine and based, and look at how based and genuine they are. And then they'll go on to write articles for Unheard about how you should shut up and let other people do things for you. But
don't believe your lying eyes. Nothing you see on the internet is what you should believe it to be, especially if it's popular.
It's all
fake, successful.
It's all gay, and you have to point it all out.
Oh, well done.
Anyway, we'll leave you with the outro stuff here. Have yourselves a very good time. Thank you to everyone who donated, and we'll see you later.
Good night.
There we go.